This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's something I got to say right off the top here. Before we get buried in the details and Hollywood borrowings and Netflix dramatizations, the real Ed Gein didn't need a chainsaw. He didn't need a mask made of this. He didn't even need a body count to scare the hell out of America. Mm-mm. Because what made Ed Gein terrifying wasn't what he did in front of anyone. It was what he did alone, quietly, with surgical calm, and what he left behind. Wasn't what you see in the movies. A farmhouse where grief and obsession metastasized into something we still haven't found a name for that feels big enough. And I even hesitate describing it in greater detail because I'd like you to see this video and it not be, you know, put off into icky land in the world of YouTube. Fun little quick story before I kind of dive into the reality versus the Hollywood on this. And I want to say this, reality is scarier than Hollywood. Okay, so if you're like thinking, oh, it's going to be a letdown, it's not, trust me. My Ed Gein story, because I'm from Wisconsin, so when you're from a place with a horrible person, everybody's got a story, right? I wasn't born, I wasn't alive at the time of Ed. But I lived not too far away from Plainfield, Wisconsin for a small point in my life. That's where Ed lived. That's where all this story takes place. And I, at one point in time in the early 2000s, I DJ'd a party at a little hole-in-the-wall bar directly across from the cemetery where Ed's buried. And what I learned so much about Ed at that party. People love talking about Ed there, even though this is like, you know, nearly half a century ago. The gravestone for Ed, there isn't one there anymore. People kept stealing it. People kept taking the gravestone. So he's there, but unmarked. At least that was the lore in like 2001. That was the last time I was in Plainfield. That's my Ed Gein story. And now the rest of the story. When Netflix and Hollywood grabs hold of Ed, it turns him in basically to Leatherface or Buffalo Bill or Norman Bates. And that's just not the real thing. It's not that they exaggerate. It's that they flatten the fear into something digestible, a spectacle, a slasher, a villain you can root against. But the truth is actually a lot colder and smaller and a lot more domestic and far, far more disturbing. He wasn't the guy that everybody feared. He was just another person who lived in this small town, shopped at the same places, got coffee at the same places, had breakfast at the same places, went to the same Piggly Wiggly. Just as far as most people knew, normal guy. Let's go back to Plainfield, Wisconsin in 1957, a town where everybody knows everybody else's dogs, tractors, like I said, breakfast orders. At the edge of it all, a solitary man named Ed Gein. He's not a boogeyman in the context, just an odd duck. Shy, polite, maybe a little off. The kind of guy who babysits your kids, fixes your stove, and doesn't cause trouble. you know, in 1957, when basically, well, anyone could watch your kids, including the stove. And maybe that's the first horror, that Ed Gein was, to most people, harmless, familiar even, forgettable. He lived alone in the old family farmhouse after his mother died. Augusta Gein, a fire and brimstone Lutheran, who taught him from childhood that women are sinful and the world is dangerous. So you got that mindset coming up. She was his sun, his gravity, his blueprint for how life worked. So you kind of get a little Norma Bates-ish going on there, at least in how she conditioned Ed to think. And when she died in 1945, something in Ed broke in half. He boarded up the rooms she used to walk through, left her things untouched, and confined himself to a single cluttered room near the kitchen. You know, like you do. He wasn't living in a house anymore. He was living in a shrine. 12 years later, on November 16th, 1957, a local hardware store owner named Bernice Warden vanished. Her last receipt showed she'd sold antifreeze to Ed Gein that morning. By nightfall, police were at his farm. What they found stopped the town cold. In a shed on the property, Bernice's body was hanging upside down from a pulley. Yeah, I'm not going to go into the great details here. Again, like to, you know, you can see the video and not get flagged. Inside the house, deputies discovered what can only be described as a handcrafted nightmare. We're talking about some of the finest handcrafted items from Wisconsin. Bones? Well, they were decor. Chairs were upholstered in... yeah. This. From people. Bowls? Well, if you were to go right here, you can get a lot of soup. And if you're listening to us on the podcast platform, you're like, what's he doing? I'm pointing to parts of me where you could, I guess, you know, custom craft your own bowl. A belt that was sewn from, I'm going to point to my chest. There were these, you know, your mouth, you know, where you have lips. Well, those items were, you ever have a window pull, you know, where you, for your blinds and stuff? Yeah. And tucked away, a mask. And a suit, stitched together from some lady friends of his. They didn't stitch the suit together. They were stitched together. Yeah. I think I did a good job of not getting too. I don't know. We'll find out. The press labeled it a house of horrors. But let's be clear. This wasn't a horror movie. It wasn't theatrics. It was personal. These weren't trophies in the way most serial, you know, often collect souvenirs. They were components, parts of a long, slow process of transformation. Ed wasn't trying to dominate his victims. He was trying to become someone else, or more precisely, to become her, Augusta. In interviews, Ed calmly admitted that most of the remains came not from fresh victims. I mean, he was not out there taking people out. He wasn't. That's not how this story goes. He was a grave robber. These were from graves. Graves of people that had already been buried. The funerals were already done. And you know, when you go to a cemetery and there's still like that fresh mound of dirt, the grass hasn't grown yet. Well, that to Ed said, hey, fresh. Not so clean. But I guess farm fresh, crypt fresh. I don't know how you'd say that. You know, farm to table, crypt to table. Although he wasn't eating. That was another one in Wisconsin. There's a lot in Wisconsin, isn't there? And I grew up around all of it. I wonder why I do this for a living. He said he'd made dozens of late night trips to local cemeteries digging up the recently buried bodies of ladies who he said resembled his mother. He kept them intact when he could. Sometimes he'd just take what he needed. A little skin, a face, maybe other things. Police corroborated his story by exhuming the graves and finding them disturbed, empty, or rearranged, or, you know, picked over. Only two murders were ever confirmed. Bernice Worden in 1957 and a tavern owner, Mary Hogan, in 1954. They found the upper half of the upper half in a paper bag on Gein's property. The rest, well, what Hollywood turns into a total horror scene. I mean, not that that's not a horror scene. That, to me, is worse than the obvious scary person running around. But you got to make your miniseries, right? The grave robbing, the desecration, the delusion. It's worse. Because the intent wasn't impulsive rage. It was careful, repetitive, quiet. And for the record, no matter what the legends say, there were no proven acts of eating. I'm really having to struggle through this thing, guys, and say things in ways that keep the overlords happy. No essay, no deranged rampage. Gein told authorities the bodies repulsed him. There was no evidence, like I said, of essay. What he did was something else, something clinical, almost craft-based. He treated human remains like fabric, tools, templates, which makes it harder to explain, not easier. The absence of sadism doesn't make him less terrifying. It actually makes him more unknowable. So what happens next? Well, Ed was arrested, charged, and quickly declared unfit to stand trial. Doctors diagnosed him with schizophrenia and committed him to Central State Hospital for the criminally insane. A decade later, in 1968, he was deemed competent to face trial for the murder of Bernice Worden. He was found guilty, but legally insane, and sent back to institutional care where he remained until his death in 1984. There was no dramatic sentencing, no last-minute twist, just a man living out his days in a locked ward, painting, reading, eating bland food. And that, again, is where the real horror lives, in the ordinariness of all of it. The man who made a suit out of people went out with a whimper. The farmhouse did not survive. Before it could be auctioned off, it burned to the ground in March of 1958 under suspicious circumstances, almost like the town wanted to erase the stage entirely. His grave marker didn't survive either. Like I've said, vandals chipped away at it for years until it vanished completely in 2000. Yeah, it was like right around the time I was there. It was later found in Seattle. Today, Ed lies in an unmarked plot beside his mother and brother. But the damage to the American psyche was done. Ed Gein did not become a headline. He became a template. You can trace him through every horror villain of the past 60 years. Psycho's Norman Bates, a mama's boy with a double life, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Leatherface, wearing faces like masks, the Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill, crafting the suit, the woman's suit, to crawl inside someone else's identity. But none of them quite match the real man, because the real Ed wasn't a monster in the shadows or a slasher on the prowl. He was a neighbor who kept to himself, the babysitter, the handyman, the son who never got over his mother. And that's why fiction can't quite match it. Fiction always needs motivation, a chase scene, a climax. But Gein didn't need any of that. He needed silence, privacy, and a very specific kind of grief that metastasized into madness. His crimes didn't happen in the frenzy of passion. They happened over years in the slow, methodical repurposing of the dead. One person at a time. One stitch at a time. He didn't do what he did because he enjoyed it. He did it because the fantasy demanded it. And when graves couldn't sustain the illusion anymore, the living became his resource. And that way, reality is scarier than fiction, because you can escape a horror movie. You can't unplug it. But you can't unplug a man who shops at your hardware store, chats with your kids, then goes home and pulls the needle and thread. Ed never roared. He never chased. He never grandstanded. He just quietly, obsessively disappeared into his own delusion and made sure no one saw what was inside until it was far too late. And that's the lesson we're left with, not about violence, but invisibility. The danger that hides in isolation, in people who seem harmless, and the quiet ones, the grief left untreated, and the terrifying possibility that what we think of as evil might not be loud. It might be a whisper. A man alone in a farmhouse, turning sorrow into ritual, one stitch at a time. Tell me your thoughts on the real Ed versus what you may have seen in the new Netflix doc, and what you've seen in countless other movies and docs over the years about Ed. That's the real Ed. If you're ever in Plainfield, here's some nice breakfast places. At least there was all those years ago. I don't know what's there anymore. It's been a couple decades for me. But a lovely little town. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of the coverage of the cases we follow for you right here. And like I said, let me know your thoughts in the comments section. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. That's me. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.